Schoenfeld, Reel 3. You were talking about that brutal foreman who strangely was not brutal to you.
No, he never touched me, and he was fairly, well, to me he was fairly decent. But I used to cringe whenever he hit fairly elderly people, you know, and for some reason, if they knew that you were an intellectual, for instance, you know, a lawyer, or it gave them even more pleasure to beat you because they regarded you as not a manual worker or an exploiter or things like that. After the beating, I got overnight, very strangely, I got covered with a skin eruption, or with a psoriasis, which I have to this day, not to that, but on that day I was covered from head to foot. And there was a very kind Jewish doctor there, who I went to him with this, and he said, he took one look at me, I remember, and he said, I have the best medicine for you. And he gave me a bowl of potatoes. Potatoes. I've never forgotten this. And I think he really. And we worked there for quite a long time. And I can remember that there was one Belgian Jew who I saw him writing one day. And I said, well, this is kind of what he's writing to. And I was very friendly with him. And he disappeared one day. And the thing is, I don't know how true that is, but I was told by the doctor actually. He said that he wrote later to the camp from Belgium to the camp commander. I don't know. And apparently he was married to a non-Jewish wife. And she came and she arranged an escape, you know. So he got away. Then there were two others who were caught, unfortunately, and were beaten up also terribly. Now I'm coming, now what was the year now? Ah, yes. This was now 43. Now, as I say, I couldn't go anymore to that place where my mother used to send the food. So somebody used to do it for me. I had to give him something that was in return. Some food in return, not done much, but I cherished the letters usually. And by then the Germans established a ghetto in Sosnet, a proper ghetto. It was closed. And we knew that. In 43, somewhere in summer, spring, they liquidated the ghetto in Sosnet and they sent people to Auschwitz. Now, we knew that. But I got one last letter from my brother who said, don't worry, I sent mother to a safe place, and I'm all right. And that was the last I ever heard of him. I don't know what happened, what he arranged, where he went. Now, my brother was looking very blonde hair, blue eyes, you know, and he spoke Polish, German. So it could be that he tried to be on Christian papers, you see. And eventually, whether he was in the underground or got caught, I don't know. I have no idea. And my mother was already elderly, you know, elderly 50, yeah. But I don't know what happened to her. So that was the last. And I forgot to mention about my father, of course. I'll go back to my father. Because father was sent to this camp near the Russian border. Now, the Germans, for some reason, abandoned the idea of the Jewish reservation, and they just chased the Jews over the border to Russian occupied Poland. But that was before 1941, I'm going back now. So, and my father used to arrive from that part of Poland, and he had to work on the railway line, you know, to convert the to do a wider one again, you know? And this was very hard work, of course. But, as it is known now, what the Russians did is that they asked the refugees from the German part if they wanted to return. And my father, and not just my father, masses of people said they wanted to go back to the German part. And those that said they wanted to go back, they put them, sent them off to Siberia, to camps or something. And the one that he just said, a letter came back, address unknown, and that was that. And then they did that to all the intellectuals and officers, you know, and they sent, I don't know how many people to. And that was the last I heard of my father. Now, where are we? Yes, in Laurahiti. I can remember that, another thing I can remember in Laurahiti, when we were sent to work in another place by tram, we had to face the wall. They didn't let us face the population. So we faced the wall till the tram arrived and we could board the tram. Now, in 1943, in summer, they sent us to Blenheim. Now, Blenheim was a much bigger camp. The factory was huge, and it was for conversion of coal into petrol, or hydrogenation of coal. Now, there were camps of any prisoner you want there, British, French, Belgian, Russian. It was surrounded by camps of any description. I can remember the British used to march really in style there. and the camp was still just a forced labor camp at first. And conditions were so-so, not too bad. People got beaten occasionally. I can remember there were two girls who lost their minds, they were shot. And I was caught once, for some reason I had a book, which I didn't even read. I don't know why I kept this book. And there was some inspection, and they saw this book, and I was just punched a few times for, you know, strange holes in here. And I think it was in 43, I cannot be sure of the date anymore, that the line goes up, and anybody who looked sort of weak or something was taken away, and all the ill people were taken, and our Jewish camp commanders knew what was going to happen. He knew that they were going to be sent to Auschwitz, or gas chamber, and there were some people who were fairly young. They tried to protect him, said, don't go out, don't say you cannot work, stand up straight, stand up tall, say you are well. But you know, some people were so demoralized that they, and they, I can still remember they put him on lorries, and the last thing I said that they were just leaving the camp. Then we had a day of work, the SS came, we were tattooed, photographed, I think they took out particulars, we were issued uniforms, consultation camp uniforms, and we were at the camp of Auschwitz then. Okay. So I never was in Auschwitz itself. It was taken over by all those camps that were taken over by Auschwitz at camp by the SS. The strange thing is that conditions actually improved. That at first the drill does, of course, with all this stuff, we had to all in unison take our hats off and hold it and march around. But the camp became much cleaner. They really cleaned the place up. The Germans in the workplace were not allowed to punch us or beat us. They had, if anything was wrong, they had to report us to the SS, who would then decide on punishment. The guards didn't come with us to work. The guards used to surround the whole factory, a huge place, and the system was, a chain of guards was counted, and our place of work is the only there. I think the non-commissioned SS officer used to go on bicycles and they used to stop us occasionally and check whether we had anything on us and that we... But, so...
What work were you doing there?
Mostly, in that sense, I used to do cable lines, the big cables, electric cables in the ground. We used to dig the trenches and lay the cables. That was... We were divided into... what they call commandos, which are groups of workers. When my commando was doing this, we were also doing occasionally some building work, concreting and things. But mostly, I think, when I was there, it was cable laying.
And this uniform they gave you, what was that?
Well, it was just a striped trousers and striped jacket, very thin sort of material, and a round sort of hat with stripes too. On the chest we had, I can't even recall it, I think it was the right side, a piece where there was those triangles, what kind of prisoner you were. Now most of the prisoners where I was were Jews, so we had like a Star of David, which was one red triangle and one yellow triangle. I think depending on the country you came from, there was a, like Poland was a P or... And then number, which mine was 178610. Yeah?
You don't forget that.
No, I didn't put it on anyway. But, that was that. But, and we got the wooden clog. Just a couple of rags to put inside on our feet. Did we have underwear? I don't think we had underwear. No, I don't think we did have any underwear, no. Not at all. No, I don't think so. But it was, we had to go to be deloused regularly. It was fairly clean then. And there was warm water after they took over. There was very strict discipline, of course, and there was, I remember one Dutch Jew got hanged. Apparently, I don't know this. He was like, they used to read, and then they used to read the proper verdict out when they did this, you know, in the name of the chief of police, the chief of the SS, and this fellow is, who comes from there and there, is accused. And he apparently tampered with an unexploded British bomb, or American bomb. With explosive. I don't know how true that is, but that was the accusation. And I can remember that the road broke and they put it up again and he talked for a minute to us. And we all had to be, of course, lined up and watch this. And later on, they hanged three people for some, I don't know, some trivial thing. And occasionally we used to come back from work at the gate. Called in my report, which was a criminal investigation branch of the Gestapo. And he used to stand there with and had somebody whom he used to hit with a stick, somebody who, you know, was caught for something or other. I don't know. He had an orchestra, not a big one. They even brought a gypsy from Auschwitz, I think, who was the violinist. And, of course, we had to march properly out of the gate, and otherwise they played, and they came in. And on Sundays, they used to play for the SS sometimes at the gate. And the SS used to sit lounging chairs with their wife or something. They even had some people who could dance or something, or for the girls, for them. Then they even had, we had a show, a theatre show, believe it or not. Yeah.
Who put that on?
No, it was all done by the prisoners, you know, and there were all sketches, all short sketches. I can still remember some of them, you know, such, and the SS used to come and sit in the front row. So this was when there was a commander there who was fairly in line. He wasn't too bad, I think. He used to take an interest. I think we were not allowed to be treated too harshly. I can remember he used to be quite a high-ranking officer. And then for some reason he was removed. And another fellow came. Now this was a different chap altogether. He had, I think, a hand missing from the front. And things changed much for the worse, you know. We were quite beaten more, and things deteriorated. He didn't keep such a control as the other one.
Who would the guards have been?
The guards, strangely, were not all SS. The guards were a curious mixture of, but they weren't fit, really, not fit young men. They were, I don't know, SR men, and some not proper SS, or the administration and the non-commissioned officer and the people in charge were all SS. But the guards who took us to work and back, were sort of a mixture of uniforms, even, you know, and
would you have had any of the police battalions, do you think? The German police battalions?
No, not the police battalions. The police had nothing to do with us. No. Unless you escaped or something. But we had to get up early in the morning, and the barracks had to be washed, and everything had to be polished and cleaned. And this was done by two people. Now, one was a young Dutch Jew, who I remember, and this was quite a cherished job, because for doing this, you could later, when you got the food in the evenings, which came in barrels, in wooden barrels, you were allowed to clean up the barrels. By cleaning out the barrels, you had another plate of soup or something, because it was stuck to the sides of the barrel that was used in return for washing the floors and polishing it before the morning, good morning in the morning. Now this Dutch Jew, by then there was already bombing of the place by Americans, by British, I don't know who it was. And so there were a lot of unexploded bombs in the place, all around the place. And they asked for volunteers to dig out those unexploded bombs, promising in return more food and things like that. Now, this Dutch young fellow volunteered for this commando. And one day, while they were digging out a bomb, it exploded and killed about, I don't know how many, you know. Because the German used to leave it there, he used to go into their safe position, and left them to it. Now this hunting slipped there. Anyway, they totally killed him. So then I got the job that this fellow had of cleaning the floors and getting the extra food. But this was sad to say, but it was a bonus for me. So we had to do this, you know, first thing in the morning. You know, I really was fairly well fed, you know. It wasn't too bad. There were two foremen there, and one came from Hamburg, and he said to me, he came to me one day and said, look, I know that somebody got a ring made from a German 5-mark coin, you know, which was done in New Camp. And it was very nice. I would like one for my wife. But I didn't know anything about it. I'm not a jeweler. I asked for it. I said, see, during the combat, not anybody do it. There were some people who at work could have a lie, what call a lace, and do it. And they wanted so much bread for it or whatever. So I said to him, you know, look, yes, I can do it for you. So he gave me this coin. This fellow in the camp took it, made a ring. And as luck would have it, I had this ring. I forget now where I put it. We're going to work, and this German SS man on a bicycle comes, stops us, and searches us. And he found this thing, you know. Never in a car, he never stopped us before, this of all days. So he took my number, and I said, well, that's it, you know, I have it now. So when I went to work, I said to this fellow, I said, look, that's what happened, you know. So he said, who was it? I said, we used to call him Tom Mix. I don't know, that's actually call him Tom Mix, I don't know. And he said, okay. Now, he was a brave German. In the evening, when we were assembling to go back to the camp, and the SS was standing there, he bicycled up there, and straight to this fellow, and I could see them arguing, and nothing happened to me. So, you know, he obviously, it wasn't pleasant for him to do this, you know, but he did it. So, and by that time, you know, the bombing was really during the daytime, quite severe. The Germans were hiding in, they had bomb shelters, proper bomb shelters, you know, quite concrete. But we were not allowed to go there. So what happened is the German prisoners of war, for instance, or the French prisoners, they left the factory altogether with the guards. We had to stay, and we had to find a hiding place anyway. So, but after the bombing was, became so bad that the Germans also escaped the factory, so we couldn't go into the shelter, there was nobody there. And I remember the same German came to me and said to me, then, it must have been during the bombing or after the bombing of Hamburg. His family was in Hamburg. He comes to me and said, what will happen to us after the war? So I said, well, of course, I said, Germany will win. That's sad. They said, oh, no. He said, no. I said, he was really worried. They don't tell me. Just, how can I tell you? But I, on the other hand, it started seeping into the Germans by then, you know, that it wasn't good. And the strange thing that this factory was almost, the factory was almost finished and started producing, and it was bombed almost immediately it started producing, you know, and that was the end of it. And then...
What was it producing, that factory?
Petrol and oil from coal.
From these caves, yes.
From coal. Quite a big concern. And occasionally, of course, some people could speak English, whether from the British prisoners of war, who had maybe had a radio in the camp, I don't know. We knew what was going on roughly. The landing in the West, you know, the Russians were, we had ideas. I know that the British prisoner camp in Blehammer was also bombed by mistake, you know, once. At night we could see the anti-aircraft fire and the searchlights. You know, we could see that things were going well for Germany. Then, of course, we're coming now to January 1945. Yeah?
You were there for quite some time weren't you?
Yes, up to that, quite some time. That was the longest I ever was in any camp.
Yes, but during the time there, you were saying about the selection for Auschwitz.
Yes.
Did that happen again?
Yes, it happened.
Yes.
From time to time, there was a selection where you were taken away by lorry.
Did you know what happened to them?
We used to know because they used to send us people from Auschwitz, who came from Auschwitz, who went to Auschwitz just for a short time and were sent to work. So some of them came to, so we knew, but then we knew, yes. And yeah, it was fairly few about it. And yes, then the Germans said, stopped us going to war. And occasionally you could see a Russian reconnaissance plane in the air. Before that, we never saw a Russian plane. This was the first time I saw a Russian, and very high, but we should have given them. Obviously, we were just sort of scouting around. And then these people started arriving and now come from other towns, which were further east. And they took up and suddenly the Germans opened all the stores of food they had. And people started, there was no order anymore, it was absolute chaos. And those who could got some things of something or bread. I don't know, nothing, you know, because it was purely luck or strength, you know, when you went to the right place, it wasn't organized at all. And the line was in, up in five, and it was really, the snow was really high on the ground, I remember, it was really frosty, and we started marching. And you know, you try to march in snow with wooden shoes, you know, the snow sort of builds up, you know, and slowly people used to swerve away. The things they had were swimming on the side of the road, they couldn't carry it anymore. And at the end of, it was the first, we used to stop somewhere. Occasionally we used to get some potatoes, if we were in a barn, they used to get the farmers to. I made a promise, boil a few potatoes, get a few potatoes. I don't remember getting bread during the march, but potatoes, yes. And we marched, and then I remember one German guard, he took his knapsack and said to me, you carry it for me. You know? So I carried it for him, but I said, I don't know whether it was deliberate or just. I can't, as we marched, you know, I sort of changed my position and got away from him, and he was getting down at him. And I fixed him. I don't know why, you know, it wasn't a plan really. And we got him, and I removed his rucksack from my shoulders, I carried it in my hand, and we got into this place for the night, and I sort of rummaged in this rucksack in the afternoon. There wasn't much food, unfortunately, there, you see, and I was afraid, with clothing, I was afraid he could spot it. And then I threw the whole thing away. I could hear him calling, you know. I was a stupid thing to do, in a way. But I can remember that vividly. And then we had very little tea, and we came to one farm, and there was a sort of big machine there, a milling machine of some sort. And you know, there was no place to lie, and I went on top of this machine, and there was corn in the machine still, you know, some corn. And I don't know where I put it, I had some sort of container or sack or something, some sort of, I don't know. And I filled this with this corn. And as we were marching, you know, later, I chewed this corn. And there was a friend of mine. And I used to give him some. And I remember we came to a place, and he asked me, this German spotted it and took it and threw it on the ground. You know, that's really well. Think about it, what?
Was it very cold? You know, you were saying it was snowing. I wonder how you were coping with that.
Well, it becomes sort of. Land, you know, because you cannot describe it. It's sort of unfeeling almost. And they were shooting people, and all the time there were shots behind you, you know, you were left behind, they were shooting people. And you heard it all the time. And of course, if you were a bit older, so, you know, the chances were as I say, I was fairly lucky because I wasn't that stark that we started.
Did you go through sort of inhabited areas on this march?
Yes,
did people
yes,
see
yes.
what
oh,
was
yes,
going on?
And occasionally the Germans tried to put something out in front of the houses, like I remember a chair and even water or milk, and the guards used to be kicking over, you know, and it was, you know, and occasionally people used to run into a house and try to get up something, and the guards used to shoot and hit, you know. Some of the Germans tried, or would have, you know, they weren't allowed to, I think, you know, even if they wanted to.